aceptado por la población indígena y campesina. En este sentido, entonces, yo creo que es un problema donde el gobierno tiene que resolver.
Los indígenas han manifestado que esperan que el gobierno revise también los proyectos hidroeléctricos Tabasará 2, Chan 75 y Chan 2. También que revisara el cumplimiento de la creación de la Comisión de Alto Nivel sobre la Venta Ilegal de Tierras Indígenas en Cusapín y la conformación de la Mesa de Concertación Nacional para los Temas Indígenas. Reportó desde Panamá Olmedo Carrasquilla, de Radio Temblor.
Y finalmente, en Europa, las medidas de austeridad impuestas por los poderosos a las grandes mayorías van acompañadas de grandes dosis de palabras que promueven la culpa, el miedo y la confusión, dice la autora del libro No nos lo creemos. Rafael Cuesta, del colectivo Más Voces, explica.
Desde Tastasi Ratia, emisora comunitaria de Bilbao, nos ofrecen la conversación con la escritora Clara Valverde, experta en temas de biopolítica y resistencia, sobre su último libro, titulado No nos lo creemos, una lectura crítica del lenguaje neoliberal. Profesora de enfermería, Valverde es activista por el derecho a la salud en el movimiento 15M y en otros movimientos. Este libro ayuda a desenmascarar el lenguaje neoliberal para entender las manipulaciones, dejar de creer las mentiras, cuestionar el poder, movilizarse contra las injusticias y recobrar la dignidad. El lenguaje es la primera y la más necesaria arma que las élites políticas y económicas utilizan para implantar sus políticas injustas y aumentar las desigualdades. Acuden a estrategias llenas de culpa, miedo y confusión para mantener su poder y necesitan que la ciudadanía crea en sus palabras y las repita. Escuchamos la entrevista.
Y es muy obvio que al neoliberalismo le va muy bien porque los ricos están haciendo más ricos, los pobres más pobres, y las desigualdades están creciendo muchísimo en España, sobre todo como país europeo. Y bueno, esto lo hacen, ya lo vemos, el neoliberalismo es una cosa muy fácil de entender. De todo lo público se hace un negocio. Y se hace un negocio para la gente, obviamente la gente que ya tienen compañías y son ricos, pues se hacen más ricos y lo mantienen y son capaces de hacer que la gente, por lo menos, no proteste mucho con el lenguaje.
¿Cómo es posible que la gente se vaya haciendo cada vez, o unos pocos cada vez más ricos a costa de los demás sin que nadie diga nada? Tiene que ver con, dices tú, con que les creemos, nos cuentan una película diferente a la que realmente estás haciendo y aún les creemos.
Claro, porque todo lo que hacen lo tapan con lenguaje, ¿no? En vez de recortes, dicen ajustes. En vez de robar, dicen austeridad. Claro, entonces, pues hace que pensemos, bueno, sí, claro, al ser austero es bueno, pero no es eso. No estamos hablando de austeridad, estamos hablando de que ellos recortan lo público para llevarlo a lo privado. Y para nosotros perdemos lo que es nuestro y ellos hacen un negocio con eso.
Muchísimas gracias, Clara, por habernos, contado algunas de las cosillas que cuentas con muchos ejemplos, además, concretos en este libro, No nos lo creemos, una lectura crítica del lenguaje neoliberal. Muchas gracias, Clara.
Vale, escarricasco.
Y mucha suerte, escarricasco, agur.
Y aquí concluye esta edición del informativo Pacifica. Agradecemos la colaboración de todas las personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del informativo Pacifica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Y gracias para su programa. However, now it's time for the English version. Will we ever have a Spanish one? I doubt it. Of Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. That's the show that happens every Thursday nights. And that's tonight, 6 to 8, also on Sunday mornings. I'm Robert Norse. Be with you for the next 2 hours, expecting some interesting interviews with a caller from the homeless encampment movement over in Salinas, and some callers from the San Lorenzo Valley Felton Medical Marijuana Centers talking about the issues that have come up there. We'll see if they reach us by phone. Also, I'm expecting a visit from a community TV advocate who is very concerned that she's going to be losing her program, Sandra Lee, who does a regular show, several regular shows on community TV, several of which I've been on a number of times. I played one of her shows last program, the audio version of it, on the political aspects of Needle Exchange, a show with me, Steve Plaich, and Emily Auger of Needle Exchange. Really, I think, timely, cutting-edge stuff, sometimes perhaps more cutting-edge than some would like, and apparently community TV is facing a real shutdown. We're going to be talking with her about that if and when she gets in the studio. And to begin with, however, I'm going to roll into a little music from a new musical. I know how much my listeners love those musicals. It's called Now, Hear This. But it's like now, here we are now, here, right here and now, and this. This is where we're at. That's the name of the musical. We're going to hear some music from it, and then we'll be rolling directly into some street interviews. And your questions, comments, and anything that's been happening recently, street reports, breaking news, always up for that. And the phone numbers here, in case you want to call in, are 427-3772. 831 is our area code. 831-427-3772 and 831-469-3119. Contributions are always welcome. Freakradio.org is our website. You go to freakradio.org and you click on the transmitter with the red dot at the top, you'll actually get our stream, in case you're wondering how to get to that, if you're not already there. We are at 101.3, of course, and on the FM dial. Not terribly loud and potent, but we're there anyway, and we remain. We endure, you might say. You can get in touch with us. If you go to freakradio.org, you can find schedules. You can find archives of some of the other shows. You can find a way to become a member of Free Radio Santa Cruz, where that doesn't mean just throwing money at us. It means actually getting on the air and saying your piece on a regular basis on subjects you think are important, or playing the music you think is important, bringing the issues to the community that you think are worth bringing that other people aren't bringing, or perhaps not bringing enough. Again, freakradio.org is the website to go to get into that situation. Call in if you'd like, 427-3772, and you can also call me off-air if you've got show suggestions, comments you don't want to really broadcast on the air, or anything you want to reach me about personally. Also, it's a line for homeless civil rights action and organizing, and it's the HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-HUF, 423-4833 is the number. Off-air to call. Again, on-air, it's 427-3772 and 469-3119. So I'll be here. If you're there and you want to get connected, you know how to do it.
Billion years ago, a tiny speck appears out in space. In the black sits a quietly spinning sphere where something whack is about to take place. What are the odds that this planet would be the perfect distance from the sun? What are the odds? Scientists say they're about an octillion to one. Amino acid sits alone in a puddle, feeling lonely and somewhat incomplete. And when he least expects it, he suddenly finds himself metabolizing from the heat.
And then to his surprise, he suddenly multiplies. And every millisecond he celebrates a new birth. And soon he makes his way through all of the oceans. He's a part of every plant and dinosaur on the earth. Whoa, oh, 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 dinosaur. Oh, that amino acid is the key that will open the
first chapter, finding pretty flowers to munch.
Then a little baby super cute velociraptor will grow up to eat the steak for lunch.
Unbeknownst to all of planet Earth's beautiful creatures, something horrible is closing in.
A giant ass rock crashes into Earth, and though it brings the end to an era, a new and bizarre one is about to begin.
Turtles start crawling round everywhere, and before we know it, there are lots of spunky monkeys that are swinging through the jungle air.
The bumblebees start zooming around with the beetles and the dragonflies. And then the lizards get together and invent the feather to become the birds in the skies.
And then the turtles and the monkeys and the beetles and the birds dominate the biosphere mix. And soon the turtles and the monkeys and the beetles and the birds dominate the Billboard Hot 100 charts in 1966.
Skiers whiz by like 40 miller skiing. The earth is running rampant with the human being.
And what are the odds that one girl and one guy would find one another and unify?
A boy drives a hot rod and lives in Escondido. He turns 20 and he's ready to roam.
A girl watches Mod Squad alone in Toledo. She too gets a hankering that it's time to leave home.
So she leaves Ohio
and he leaves Cali.
They head east to their new domains.
They meet one night at a bowling alley. It's love at first sight at Fantasy Lane.
Then one night something happens to them after sharing a malt and french fries.
This man and this woman get up on each other.
Something starts to grow, and 9 months later something new enters this world, and it opens its eyes.
What are the odds that we would get this world and mix up like a cinnamon bun?
What are the odds that we would make it through Andrew Dice playing Rolla Dunn?
What are the odds?
Probably about an inch in this
And that was What Are the Odds from Now, Here, and This. Now, Here, This. So, welcome to the show if you're with me. And again, I encourage you to feel free to speak your mind on these issues, even if you disagree with me. There's a lot of controversy on a number of these issues, at least in some quarters. I have some pretty strong views on them, but that shouldn't stop you from expressing yours. I'm going to begin with some street reports, and I have been searching through the archives that I have, the records, and I don't think these have been played. These are back at the beginning of January at a Food Not Bombs meal when there was rain happening, and the meal had previously been held in Laurel Park next to the Loudon Nelson Center. And they moved it, Food Not Bombs did, to the eaves of the post office, and they were serving there. Of course, from there they were driven away by postal officials and police some weeks later. But these are interviews around the time of the initial arrival at the post office, or possibly a week after they had done it once before. And there is an earlier section that I think I did play on the air, which a postal official says that we shouldn't be there, and he doesn't want us there, and, you know, it's bad for us to be there, and, you know, he's not trying to be mean, but, give up your rights, abandon the public space, and do what we say. And Food Not Bombs folks at that particular time did not continue to serve food. Now, of course, they serve food about an eighth of a block away toward the... a little bit toward the town clock, where there's actually more open space and they're more visible. And people often come and sit with their food and eat on the steps of the post office. And this is all on Saturday afternoon. It starts at 4 o'clock, and pretty good food. I recommend it. It's vegetarian. If you're a carnivore, you know, you've got to bring your own chicken, so to speak. But if you're, you know, if you're into a variety of different kinds of food, then it's a good place to come. You get to meet a lot of different people, strong voices of a different kind. I get regularly dragged over the coals by the guy who thinks I'm a CIA agent. I keep telling him that if I'm a CIA agent, I want my check, but nobody pays any attention to me. So I keep waiting for that glorious day. It's interesting, the CIA is now, of course, considered more liberal than the rest of the war establishment in Washington, including... I guess it was Bush, but it may even be more liberal than the Obama group, because, as you know, Obama, the guy that everyone's voted for because they were afraid that the Supreme Court would be we get more conservative if a right-wing Republican were elected or a middle-of-the-road Republican. Instead, you've got Obama pushing for secrecy in not allowing people to know about drone killings and who's being targeted there in his presentations to the Supreme Court. So you don't even have to wait for Supreme Court justices to die or retire to get worse justices. You got a worse administration that's pushing laws that can assassinate U.S. citizens without any kind of oversight, without any kind of transparency, without any kind of warning, without any kind of court process. And it's amazing that we've gotten to that position. It's sort of, I've sit there, everyone's sort of baffled and doesn't know what to do, and I guess I better just go back and, you know, do what I'm doing and ignore the whole thing, which, of course, is what I do, except when I happen to mention it, which, you know, a couple times a week, perhaps. But if anybody has any ideas as to what to do about it, and I guess there are some demonstrations happening at the town clock. We're trying to raise the issue. Please let me know. Call-in number is 427-3772. And let's go back to Food Not Bombs. I believe it was January 4th. This is from about 2 months ago. But I'm thinking that we have some voices here that got recorded but didn't get played. And I'm going to do that now. Feel free to call in with your thoughts. We can interrupt the taped interviews for live conversation. I almost always do. And I'll take it away.
We'll see what happens. Looks like the folks have set up. What kind of delicious foods do we have today?
Rice with a turmeric mushroom sauce, purple potatoes, and like a garlic rosemary olive oil, carrot squash, ginger soup, fresh garden salad, and a fruit salad of many varieties, tofu with stir-fried vegetables, assorted nuts, and Odwalla juice.
And chocolate almond horns, it looks like. I see a box with that label on it.
You did see that, yep. The audience can't see it, so it's good to point that out.
That's true. Radio, but you can use your imagination and come down next Saturday and have something to eat.
That's right.
Possibly here or possibly at Laurel Park. I guess it's Food Not Bomb serves in different places.
Laurel Park, yeah. Luden Nelson Community Center, yeah. This is my first week being here, so I'm not sure.
Oh, well, welcome to my first week at this particular place. I was at Laurel Park. Mostly reporting and recording, but
good.
So, how long did it take to prepare this meal?
I wasn't here this afternoon. I only came in at about 2 o'clock, but I know that some of the volunteers were working probably from 11 or 10 in the morning.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
So, Jean, how long did it take to prepare this feast? You know,
all this stuff you might need. 2 o'clock stopped running.
I see. Very poetic, I must say.
The clock stopped running about 5 minutes to 4.
And so you've been working hard to get this out. I saw you hefting up the crates of Odwalla juice. And we have a small line of folks coming to have a bite to eat. Depending on who you talk to. And over to the side, there's a box with a label trash and food waste. Another box labeled plastic, fork, spoons, beverage, bottle. And again, the table is set off the left side of the postal area, the overhang, which covers quite a distance, at least 20 or 25 feet from the main door of the post office, which is open at the moment. Tasty food, come and get it. And it's hey, Tony. Tony Cuspa, the renowned singer, has arrived. He kept sampling a bowl of the soup. How is the soup, Tony?
I just tasted it. It's absolutely fantastic, even though it doesn't have raw beef in it.
No raw beef. Well, you know, this is Food Not Bombs. They're known for their vegan or vegetarian.
Really? I didn't know that. It's great.
Although not always. It depends on the Food Not Bomb.
It's forget bombs, more get food. More get food. forget bombs.
Nicely put. It needs work. Words work.
Well, it's internally rhyming, though.
So it may well.
And it's also an equation. On one side of the equation is forget bombs, more get food.
What's up,
kid? Hey, that is me.
I heard that. We're talking with that.
I got the proof yesterday, man.
Man about cats. What are you saying here?
I've been going all New Year's and all holidays and about 2 weeks, and somebody told me that the cows went down there and cut the bushes down, and I noticed they took out those three benches down there where Joe was hanging in, and he was attracting all those beef freaks because they all went.
Are we talking about near the
down at Westcliff?
Down at Westcliff
Drive.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
News to me.
So, a lot of beef freaks were coming down there because of Joe. Joe was selling marijuana.
A marijuana guy.
Yeah. The cops came out with a mugshot and showed it to me right in front of Joe one time, man. I was laughing. I said, Joe, whoa. And what it was he was harassing the gardener. He was raking, and the gardener was harassing him. So he ended up going to court for it. But the guy, he had a warrant for him, but the guy let him go. Because I think what it was they were trying to come in, and he showed it to me. I'm not a cop.
I'm a little unsure. Where was it?
It was
in
Westcliff.
Is it a park? Is it just a couple of benches?
The railing where everybody looks off into the ocean, the surfers and everything, they got benches.
Right.
Well, he came up and he showed me the mugshot. So I figured the reason he showed me the mugshot was because he was trying to let me know that I was sitting with a criminal.
Oh, I see. So he wanted to alert you to the possibility of the danger in your situation.
Yeah. But what he failed to realize is that I'm a Christian preacher and I'm supposed to be around people like that.
I see. I didn't know you were a preacher, Kevin.
It's totally normal for me to be around all kinds of folks.
I mean, you say real cat people only. Now, isn't that a sort of discriminatory? What about the dog people?
No, real cat people are people who they kick down immediately. They kick down immediately.
Oh, you mean money-wise?
Because they see all the money up there.
I see. It looks like a nice...
And they see the sign itself. And they see the beautiful, healthy cat.
Now, we're talking about a guy who you can often find downtown Santa Cruz. I haven't seen him the last couple of days. I haven't been down there, actually, much the last couple of days. But he's a guy who wheels around with a cat in his arms in his wheelchair. And it's kind of sleeping in this basket. And he's essentially a cat panhandler. It's illegal to panhandle with your dogs, but it is legal to panhandle with cats and apparently maybe rabbits and other creatures. I don't know why this discrimination against dogs. I guess it's easier to take care of a dog, or I don't think it would be necessarily. I don't quite know the reason, but maybe someone can let us in on the reasons at some point if they have any notions. Let's hear some more from Catman in early January at the Food Not Bombs Meal, which, by the way, still goes on every Saturday 4 o'clock, actually, and around 5:30 there's an Occupy Santa Cruz meeting as well, very close by, on the steps of the post office. So far, postal officials have not attempted to drive Occupy Santa Cruz people away. It's a pretty large space, and there's no reason to do that other than some sort of political discrimination or, I don't know, some sort of anal enforcement of rules that hasn't got much relevance to any real safety or even public convenience concerns. So that hasn't happened, and I'm glad to say that. It's a relatively small gathering. I was there last week, and the main focus of the gatherings, and I'm kind of throw this in since we're all talking about stuff that's happened 2 months ago. I want to kind of bring us up to date. There's really a movement for a sanctuary for sleepers, a camper sanctuary where people can set up their tents, go to sleep at night, because after all, 95% of the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in the Santa Cruz area are without shelter at night, and also under the Santa Cruz ordinances, illegal after 11 o'clock at night if they sleep, and any time of the day or night if they set up a campsite and intend to stay overnight. That's the wording of the Santa Cruz's 6.36 camping prohibition. So it's important for people to feel safe in where they are. You hear a lot about public safety these days, shootings, knifings, thefts. Well, people feel safer in groups. So they feel safer, women and older vulnerable people and younger people who are not so buff, if you will, feel safer. Even ordinary buff people
may feel safer in groups, and also their stuff can be watched during the day and so forth. And that seems to be the civilized approach to the whole situation. It's been done at places like San Lorenzo Park during the Occupy movement. There was a two-month-long campground there. Nobody died there. I mean, there was complaints of drug dealing and that sort of thing, but I'm afraid that's going to happen anywhere and anyway, because it's nature what happens when you have a black market for drugs, not to mention a miserable situation outside where people then are kind of pressed into medicating themselves, and that's what they tend to do, some of them. According to activist Becky Johnson, I'm not quite sure where she gets her stats, but I think she says that if you are that's a very low, in terms of the amount of people who are drug abusers. By drugs, we don't mean marijuana, but, you know, something harder. You are a, that actually happens about the same rate as the ordinary house population once you're in, if you're in a house. But once you get into a homeless situation, two or three months later, your homeless situation produces more more drug abuse. The rate of drug abuse rises, and that has to do with, I would kind of imagine, although I haven't got any hard proof, that that's because of the difficulties of being outside and the problems in that regard. So, and that voice you hear in the distance and the nose you hear getting blown is that of community television host and producer Sandra Lee, who's here and attempt to maneuver the very archaic chair over. We also have a mysterious observer, Freedom, who is, I mentioned there's a kind of a movement for a campground sanctuary that is being led by a number of people, often in different directions. Brent Adams is interested in that. Freedom here is interested in a movement. And actually, there were 20 people at the sanctuary meeting on Wednesday, yesterday, which happens every week after the Huff meeting at the Sub Rosa Cafe, for those who want to check that out. Again, Sub Rosa Cafe is at 703 Pacific, and the Huff meeting meets at 10 a.m. on Wednesday morning. And then at noon, I think the campground campers are often meeting, although I think they're having a second meeting on Saturday. Is that the current status? Are you familiar with that, Freedom? You know what the story is on that?
Yeah, the next meeting regarding the sanctuary camp will be on Saturday at the post office after Food Not Bombs at the General Assembly at 5:30. It's going to be an agenda item brought there to occupy Santa Cruz, and like you said, I believe there's one on Wednesday as well, specifically for this.
Cool. Feel free to make yourself comfortable. We've got a number of topics that are going to be bubbling here. Here's another chair for you. You can stand if you want. You can actually stand on your head if you'd like it.
Okay. I'm good.
And so we're making room here in the studio. Usually, I mean, I'm very privileged to have guests. I usually spend my time in verbal masturbation, endlessly talking about the same subjects myself, which I don't think is entirely without merit, but it can get kind of boring for those who are listening. So again, I remind you, the call-in number here is 427-3772. We're going to suspend the Food Not Bombs conversation of January 4th, which I was just playing, and we'll instead move now to the live portion of the show, which is always good. And I'll remind you that there may be some people calling in from the Felton Medical Marijuana Collectives and also from Salinas's homeless encampment, which has a name. It was in Chinatown. It was driven away by police. They protested at City Hall, and then they came back, or they're trying to come back. It's connected with businesses like Dorothy's Place in Salinas, which I've never been to, but I actually spoke to folks there for the first time today. So we may be getting a call from that group, and I if not today, I hope to have them on Sunday on the air. But there's also an institution in our town which I've been invited to a number of times on television. That's it's your community TV work, Sandra.
Community TV, yes. Thank you, Robert, for having me. You know, things are really up in the air. There's a lot of misinformation being spewed about town about what's actually happening with community TV, and I just kind of like to take a second to tell people what I'm getting from all this. And I'll just start, I guess, if you don't mind.
No, go for it.
So here we are. We're in this realm right now where the county is calling the shots. Our contract with them that was signed in 1994 is now expiring, in June of this year, June 31st, is the last day of that contract. And so for us to move forward, we have to come up with a new contract starting July 1st. Now, there's a big cloud over all of community TV public access around the country because of some laws that were passed back in 2006. And it's called DFCA. And, to be honest with you, I have no idea what that all stands for, but what it basically entails is that the Comcast and Charters of the country don't have to provide funding for management and operational staff for community television stations. What I'm gathering is that there's still going to be funds coming from these cable giants to the county for community TV to continue, but that funding is only for equipment, the facility, and maintenance of that equipment and facility. So there's no leadership funding, no executive director funding, no teaching funding, no access facilitator funding. Those are the people that take care of us when we go in to do our TV show. There's paid staff there that do this. And now that doesn't happen until 2014. And what our county government is doing and saying to us is that, well, you guys haven't really planned for this big transition, and we really don't think you can do this transition. And so what we want to do is pull back your funding for 2013-2014 and put it in a kitty. And, that in terms, it doesn't sound like a horrible idea because, we've had some pretty bad management at the station, and I've been very critical of them through the years. And so, that they say that, I'm not too surprised. But, the easy way through this would have been, hey, we know we got a big obstacle in front of us, and we'll go ahead and continue your contract up until 2014. And you guys get this together so it'll transition easy. Well, they're not giving us that option. They're forcing us into cutting programs, cutting services now. And that means like in the next couple of months. Now, I've been in contact with the executive director. We're going through this merger with a Gilroy organization called CMAP. And, they are going through these difficulties, too. They've come up with some plans on getting through this. And hopefully, with a merger of the two organizations, we're going to get community TV to get through this. But what I'm seeing in reality is that they're going to cut out access for us community producers. That's like Voices from the Village and Idle Hands and My Issues Show and the Brookdale Bluegrass Hour and Paula's Little Let's Date Show and all these shows that we produce here in the station. Well, they're going to try to shut that down. They're saying they're going to save community TV, but in reality, what they consider community TV is community access to the government shows. That means the Board of Supervisors meetings, the City Council meetings, Capitola Watsonville meetings. They want to have those covered. They want to be able to bring you the government programming from UCSC and the major things from the CHP and from the Sheriff's Department, and they want to be able to continue bringing you that programming, but they don't want to fund us doing our community stuff. But what they're saying, so if you go to the board and say, hey, look, you guys, why are you trying to get rid of community TV? They're going to tell you, well, no, we're doing everything in our power to keep community TV alive. And in which they're going to create a new contract that basically is going to provide funding for us to cover their government events and nothing else. And so that leaves us with the realization that the doors are going to close to us community producers unless it's something really dramatic happens. Now, my goal is to try to get you guys motivated to convince the board to, one, don't pull our funding a year early. Please let us get our plan together in a sane fashion that we can come to you in 2014 and say, look, here we go. But I don't expect you to do that. You know, I just hope you would consider that at least you'll keep our doors open for that time. Since without your contract, and this is the part that scares me the most, folks, is without that contract, they can pull community TV off the face of the earth. They can take our bank accounts. They can take all the equipment and sell it. And that's it. So it's really that bleak of an option. It's either we take what they're going to throw us, or we're gone completely. And that part really, really disturbed me, folks. When I heard that, and I just heard that recently, they're trying to keep that sheltered from us. But that's the reality of the contract that we signed back in 1994. States that in the terms of end of contract that they take possession of everything that we have. So we need to make sure that we get our contract, even if it is to cover the government shows, to keep community TV afloat, which is what our management and staff and the board are really working hard to come across. And so that leaves us community access producers here with this dilemma. And tonight in front of the board of directors at Community TV, I made a proposal on how we can keep 20 hours a week of community access available to the community producers and community members, and also to be able to keep the doors open so you can rent out cameras or use the studio for productions. You know, basically that's going to entail having to come up with some funding to pay for a part-time 20-hour a week position. You know, we figured that out to be right about $25,000, which isn't a whole lot of money in anybody's books in this TV world, folks. That's one commercial on regular TV. But, you know, we got to make that money happen. And so I proposed some fundraisers. And believe it or not, I proposed these fundraisers a year ago. But because it wasn't a big deal to make money, these have been tabled. And now here again, I'm proposing four fundraisers a year for the TV station. A bowling party fundraiser that we've tried in the past that was very successful. A whole lot of fun. Brought all of us community people together. And it made the whole entire organization stronger. It was a great event and we made about $5,000. I also proposed that we do pledge drive programming like every other nonprofit radio or KQED, where we ask our producers, like the Horse Lady, to come up with about an hour and a half of her favorite shows and come on and say, hey, look what we can do with community TV. Please support us. I'll do Spilly Chili's Greatest Bands and say, hey, folks, if you like this, how about sending us some money? You know, it's pretty simple stuff. It wouldn't take a whole lot of effort or upfront capital to put this one on. Then in October, what I want to do, and this is open to the entire community, folks, a costume dance party at the Coconut Grove of a casino night, 1920s costumes. We'll get some great bands out there. You come out and party with us, and we'll have a great costume party like nobody's business. That's not too much to ask for, is it? And then I proposed this last year that over the Black Friday weekend that we team up with a lot of the big box companies here in town, ask them for donations of their items, and we'll try to sell them on TV while we do a telethon with some of the best Santa Cruz performers that we can throw your way. I mean, it'll be 24 hours of incredible fun programming, and it'll give you a chance to get these Black Friday deals before the stores open, and we can all make some money.
And what was the reaction of the board to this proposal?
Well, they've been putting out these. You know, this isn't the first time, Robert, that I brought this up. And so tonight
they tabled it again.
I typed it up in the letter and put it in their face. You know, I did a song and dance one time, and I got angry with them another time, and so I figured, well, you know, I dated this paper and I put it in their face tonight, and there was only 6 of the 12 board members there.
They were bored to be at the board.
Yeah, and you know, with that kind of support, it just goes to show we don't stand a chance. But anyway, with these few fundraisers, we can pay for that access facilitator and keep community access available to all the people here in Santa Cruz. I don't think that's a whole lot to ask for. I mean, look at the shows we bring you. on our station. I know that I can't go anywhere from Boulder Creek to Watsonville without somebody saying, hey, Spilly, man, right on. Keep getting that
Spilly
word out.
Spilly Chili's.
Yeah, Spilly Chili's my moniker. And you know, I love everybody, man. You guys are the greatest that you love our station. You love our shows. Before I started doing shows, folks, I watched community TV. I watched these people.
How long have you been on?
I've only been around for about 6 years now, and only on myself for about three.
How much does it cost for someone to get access to community TV? Because I know most people that, you know, that I'm concerned about on their show don't even have a place to watch any TV, much less community TV.
Well, and I'm one of those people. You know, I'm homeless. I live in an RV off the grid. I don't have cable. I don't have satellite. I watch DVDs if somebody gives me one.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of the great politicians here in the area, like Gary Arnold, for instance, has been giving me some incredible DVDs of incredible stuff to learn. And so I thank all of you that provide me with stuff to watch. But
what is the watchership? Do you have a sense of how many people actually do access community TV?
We're not allowed those figures for some reason. Comcast doesn't chart community access television, and we really have no idea. You know, I hope that it's, you know, between 1 and 10, maybe 100 at any given time. You know, what I have found, Robert, is my fans watch late night on the weekends, and I get the best responses, especially for our Star Makers show and the
what shows do
stuff.
You do?
Well, I actually put out 4 to 5 shows a year, folks. My normal series...
A year? Or you mean four to five different shows each month, almost each week?
Biweekly, we have our Bowl of Rocks show, which is the music band showcase show. Spilly Chili's Bowl of Rocks, that's one we do. Then we have Issues, which is the political talk show on Tuesday nights. We also do the Brookdale Bluegrass Festival, which is that great show on Monday nights. I didn't do the sound, folks. But we're getting better and better, and we got some great stuff coming up here. There's a big event March 8th and 9th up at Costa Nova. And then I also do the Santa Cruz Star Makers show. That's the show, folks, that brought you James Durbin 4 years before Fox did. We had him dressed as Elvis and dressed as Nacho Libre. And, you know, the guy's a whole lot of fun, and I can't applaud him enough. In fact, sometimes I feel like a proud parent that, you know, he got his start with us. But God bless you, James, if you're out there, and any of his friends tell him we said we love you. But you know, this is all stuff, and you know what it cost us to do that? We pretty much do it for free. If somebody was grateful enough to give us some money for buying a DVD, we're blessed. And, you know, my volunteers do this for free. We have a sign that says, we'll work for pizza. And we do these shows week in, week out. And we don't charge you guys anything
for
doing
that.
Well, I know that
you've had me on the air at least a dozen times.
And I try to get him to buy a DVD whenever I can.
Yeah, you occasionally get me to buy a DVD. It happens. And sometimes I give you money and you won't take it. That's kind of interesting.
Well, you know,
you're proud. I will say that about you. You know, actually, you know, you're a little both. But I know that on the Issues program, not only have you put us on the air, but you've graciously let us use the soundtrack here on Free Radio to put on the debates and discussions that other people won't carry, like the latest stuff was this political implications of the needle exchange ban that was cooked up behind closed doors at Santa Cruz City Council 3 or 4 weeks ago. Which, you know, just came down like a fucking load of rocks on the heads of, I think, of all of us. I'm not a needle user myself, but the idea that it's unhealthy to get clean needles and to dispose of dirty ones is the most absurd idea I've ever heard. Yet it was voted in by the city council, and it's everywhere banned in the Santa Cruz city limits. There's still needle exchange at the Mammal Line. But you put that show out there with Steve Plaich and Emily Auger, and I was also there on the show. And you've done that a number of times with the Issue show, so I certainly would like to see you continue.
That wasn't actually considered Issues. That was a show we did standalone. And you know, folks, I'm not a needle user either, but when I see something that's detrimental to the community's safety, I have to say something. I feel it's my obligation to you guys to say, look, this is messed up, folks. We got to change this. And that's why I thank Pirate Radio for doing what they do to get this word out and allowing me to even be here to talk about this. But, no, we've done the Santa Cruz 11 programs together.
Yeah, several.
We did the... the five of you, the Spanish Inquisition at the bank intrusion thing.
Oh, the River Street bank situation, and also Linda Lemaster's trial.
You've
done a number of things. Homeless issues, five minute rants for me every so often for
sure. And so we, you know, it's important for, and you know, Robert, I've gotten great comments from people that enjoy your little 5 minute rants. And again, you're welcome anytime. It's unfortunately not a time when you're in town, but Wednesday nights, my friend, the second Wednesday, please come down. You're always welcome to do that. It's not, I didn't pull the plug on him. He was just too busy to be there. And so we're always open to...
What about a customary $50,000 fee?
Well, there's always a catch. And, you know, with proper sponsorships, folks, we can pull that rabbit out of the hat. And so let's get back to this funding dilemma. You know, it's not a whole lot of money. You know, it's less than the price of one sheriff to keep community TV open and thriving. And, you know, not to say that we don't need our sheriffs, but we're talking one. The salary of one sheriff will keep community TV open for
a
whole year.
We need our sheriffs to get all that marijuana that is, you know, is all over the place. We've got to stop the crime war and the many shootings and stabbings and all, get rid of all those homeless camps. I mean, that's really an important...
Well, the homeless thing is such a tragedy and how it's being blown out of proportion.
I'm being sarcastic.
And the fear-monger thing, and just about everything that happens in government seems to be driven by fear. And I don't know about you folks, but I'm so sick of hearing, because of 9/11, we can take away your rights. Because of 9/11, we can access all your information without a warrant. Because of 9/11, we can kill you. I mean, I'm sick of it. 9/11 was fixed. Folks, you all know that. I'm preaching to the choir when I tell you that. And the fact that they're still fear-mongering us with that same statement here close to 12 years later just makes me deadly ill. And I was watching 1984, the movie with John Hurt, the other night. And I don't know if any of you folks have seen that at home, but it's actually just started to scare the dickens out of me that we're starting to head into that realm here.
Starting.
Well, let's say 100 years into that. Mm-hmm. You know, again, if you watch our shows.
30 years into it. You know, it's 84, 94, 10, 4, 14. But let me ask you, what percentage of the shows on community TV are government programming? Do you have any sense of that?
Well, we have a whole channel dedicated to the government.
There are three channels,
we
right?
We have three channels. It's called, well, it was called PEG. Public, education, and government.
Uh-huh.
And so the channel 27 or 73 in Watsonville is the public access. And then channel 72 or 26 is the education channel, I think. And then 25 and 71 is the government channel, where we show the Board of Supervisors meetings and the City Council meetings. And those meetings are important, folks. Don't get me wrong. Those are very important. I tried to watch them myself when I had cable. I try to get copies of them whenever I can from the station to see what's going on. And it's so important that we keep that going. And so I have to support the Board of Supervisors in allowing us to, please, let's move forward with that. But also, please, let the members of Community TV have a little faith in this.
How can people impact the board? I mean, is there a way to lobby the board to make... Could they make a... I guess your proposal you requires that they accept a plan to do some fundraising along the lines, or some other lines you're thinking of? Or?
Well, this could be completely volunteer member driven. We don't really need the participation of anybody.
Including the board of directors.
No, the board of directors, the board of supervisors. We do need the board. Don't get me wrong, folks. We need the board of supervisors to continue some sort of contract with CTV to keep the doors open. With that said, DFCA financing will provide us all the equipment. We can get all brand new high def equipment. We're going to get all brand new servers to show you programs in high def. We're going to get all kinds of new equipment. We can actually start a school like nobody's business and make money and revenue from that, which is something else I proposed but has been completely shelved. But plans are talking with
Cabrillo College, where we might be able to do some merging with them as well with the Gilroy organization. So there's still hope, folks. If we can get out to that Board of Supervisors meeting this coming Tuesday at 9 o'clock in the morning on the Ocean Street County building.
You're talking about 5 days away?
5 days. This coming Tuesday, there's general comment or public comment or whatever they call that at the beginning of each meeting, where you can go up and say, hey, I'm a fan of community TV. I think it's important that we continue public access. Please allow the financing to continue for 2013, 2014, when the DFCA comes in. And I guarantee, if anybody listens to my proposal, we're well on our way to a successful organization past this funding crisis.
Have you tried to lobby any of, I call them the stupid vipers, but have you tried to lobby any of the supervisors regarding this, Leopold, Coonerty?
Well, to be honest, I haven't got involved until I just recently found out that they are planning to pull the plug a year early. And other than that, I was pretty much trying to stay out of this whole thing. But now they got me riled up. I mean, that's a year of funding that they want to pull just because they can.
What is the proposal coming up on the, I guess you're saying this is the second week it's come up. Is there a, did it come up last week as well?
Well, what's coming up on this Tuesday, is we're not on the calendar, so all you can do is public comment. But on the 19th, folks, March 19th, that's when we're going to have to come up with some serious numbers on paper, and the contract's going to have to be put out there, and we're going to have to move on it. So I've actually kind of felt that we should have been protesting a year ago. But we didn't know about any of this, and we should have been protesting 2 months ago. But they were trying to bamboozle us and giving up.
Is this on the 19th where they're, excuse me for interrupting us.
That's okay.
Is this on the 19th? There's actually a hearing at the Board of Supervisors or at some other place?
This is at the Board of Supervisors where we're on the calendar to discuss the new contract with the county.
And have you haven't had any communication with any of the board members to see what their opinions are to present yours?
I'm going Tuesday, folks. I'm going to be there Tuesday morning. I was hoping to get there last Tuesday. I couldn't make it. I wasn't prepared. I didn't have my proposal.
Did some people
completed.
Come on that? On to talk
yeah,
about?
We actually had a lot of people. Charlie Phelps and Betsy and John Maurer and some of the volunteers from the station were out there. But we need more support, folks. We didn't get the word out in time.
And that
I
happens,
found
by
out
the way.
About it the day before that we actually got clearance from some of the lords above to say, yeah, now is the time to go make a stink. I wanted to make a stink a year ago, and I have been making a stink.
Yeah, you don't need clearance from the lords above, although I suppose they could be
critical.
Well,
you know, we want to keep the contract. We don't want to, you know, the last thing I want to do right now, and I'm saying this in front of God and everybody, I don't want to piss these guys off and have them pull the plug, because I already told
guys,
you.
Who are these guys?
That's the Board of Supervisors. They control us.
Well, you know,
and so
oral
we need
communications.
Their support. We need to have the doors open.
Oral communications, that is to say, the public comment on items not on the agenda, which is your item until March 19th, is at 9 o'clock in the morning at the Board of Supervisors. Board of Supervisors has a somewhat more liberal policy than the Santa Cruz City Council. They usually allow everyone to speak for at least 3 minutes, and if there's a huge line, then what they do is they'll ask you to come back after the rest of the agenda, which could be at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But generally speaking, everyone gets to talk who comes to the oral communications period. It's on the fifth floor of the county building. And here's a caller from either a supporter or someone who wants to shut down community TV. Let's see who's calling in. Hi there. You are on Free Radio with Robert and Sandra.
Hi, Robert. This is Jason Pascal here.
Hey, Jason. I take
also
it you're probably...
We're also known out there as Reverend Doctor, the electronic. He used to work out there out on the Pacific Street out there. It was great.
Now, Jason, I take it you're calling on a somewhat different... You haven't been listening to our show, I take it, or have you?
No, I haven't, but I knew I should give you a call tonight.
Okay, well, I want you to feel free to speak your mind briefly, although you're probably going to be jumping into another topic. But feel free to do that. I guess you got time to hang here.
I just wanted to call because it's been the 10-year anniversary where Lauren Butch Baker viciously had me extradited out of the state of California over a 10-year-old marijuana charge in the state of New Hampshire. And so that's why I was calling up. You know, today is, you know, I've heard that, Pacific, the mall down there has kind of gone berserk. And I heard that there's lots of violence now and
well, you can't. The Sentinel is doing. I mean, it's true. Two police officers were shot dead on Tuesday, and that is definitely violence, and you know, lethal violence. But in terms of everything going berserk, well, I mean, you know, that's the Sentinel is making a lot to do with some rapes.
And you can't trust them either. They do a hack job. Their stories are always a hack job.
Right. And so you're this is a subject in terms of the deaths of Baker and Elizabeth Butler, the two.
And Community TV wants to say publicly that we are so sorry about that tragedy, and that we are going to work with the Santa Cruz Police Department and Sheriff's Department to come up with a memorial program for those.
Well, individuals. You know, hey, I think it's I do not condone the death of Butch Baker at all, but what I'm calling about is to make sure that you know that he's looked at in a true light. Because this is a guy who married a woman who had a wooden leg. After he married her, he stayed with her, and then after that, you know, he spent all of her money and then left her. Then he remarried another woman. And I saw some of his tactics firsthand. And, so, you know, as for, a great memorial and all that, it's really tough for me to say that. And, you know, so I just got to make my point known that I don't believe he should have been killed. I don't believe anybody should have. But I think what's going to happen now is him and his legacy are going to be memorialized. And maybe I think that the people of Santa Cruz need to take a better look at that before they go and do it.
Yeah, it's probably not the best time to raise the issue. But, you know, I will talk a little bit about that after you know, when you're finished. And I appreciate your calling in. How are you doing otherwise? I know that you were a fortune teller. You were, should we say, how would you describe you? You're a fortune teller, no? Palm reader?
Tarot reader? Yeah, I'm a fortune teller, and I'm a gree-gree man.
You're an African-American guy who essentially got a lot of shit, some of it racial, some of it class-oriented, on Pacific Avenue, a lot of it from Baker, has to be said.
Absolutely.
Back on 2003, a lot of it around marijuana.
Yeah, actually, this happened. He was killed 3 days from the 10-year anniversary of the day he had me arrested and shit back in. This is a guy who arrested me for having insulin syringes because when I first came into town, I didn't have a prescription for them because where I bought them, you didn't need to have a doctor's prescription. I had my insulin syringes, and he arrested me for them and he took my insulin and I got sick. I mean, this is you know, I can't really say this is a good guy. And I really kind of, you know, it's sort of like Santa Cruz. It's like a karmic thing, and they refuse to deal with it. That's why, you know, the NAACP investigated them, and they were arresting black people for marijuana offenses in Santa Cruz at huge levels.
Well,
you know? If you're white, you can get away with whatever in Santa Cruz. But if you're African, I've seen people on the internet lately talk about getting vigilante gangs together to go and, you know, weed the gangbangers or whoever they perceive as a threat out there. And part of it's a cultural thing in Santa Cruz. You know, it's the surfers, and I live in the deep south, and I can tell you that I observed more dead-on racism in Santa Cruz than I ever experienced out here in the deep south.
You're calling from Arkansas?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely, because, you know, it's evident. You know, that if a bunch of black kids started coming down there and living on the street and laying out, those cops would be down there in a heartbeat. They wouldn't let that happen. Yeah, those kids are out there. Now they forced them into going out into the Poganip or out there into the river, and they shoot heroin out there. That is all to be blamed on the police department. Yeah, they haven't done it. And then they have their little narcs, the Downtown Association, that, you know, those aren't cops. Why are they acting like cops? this is dealing with the Chamber of Commerce, and that's why I really had a hard time telling anybody to shop in Santa Cruz, because it's just very hidden until you see it. Racism it's evident if you really look into it in Santa Cruz, whether it's historically. You know, they bring up the Mission. The Mission has always been a place where that it's haunted. I mean, they really hurt people and murdered people in that Mission, and they burned down the Chinatown. They don't want to bring that up, now, do they?
I think that's important stuff historically, and I think it's also really important what is happening in terms of the sweeps of homeless camps and the criminalization of people through this, the boogeyman of needles and crime and all that sort of thing.
Well, you know, the needle thing, you know, it's like, you know, if they had a place to do it, then I'm sure that they would probably do it in that place. You know, that's basically what it boils down to. If not, they're going to have needles on the trails, you know, and stuff getting out of the river and everything. You know, I know that place is probably, you know, there has been lots of stuff that's happened there, and some of it they let go on, and then others they if black people come in there, they don't allow that. Mexicans, you know, they'll let them because, you know, they have family there. But if you're black, they're going to target you in Santa Cruz County.
You know, that's generally...
Jason, that's
generally what I hear from African-Americans in the African-American community here who I've talked to, people like Mark Halfman, who was the chair of the former Citizens Police Review Board. And, you know, even mentioning it is a taboo subject. So, for example, when Tony Madrigal, who I have no great love of, who a former city council member.
I really feel sorry for the people that are Spanish that live and Mexican that live in Santa
what
Cruz.
Let me tell you,
those people are being exposed to chemicals. They have kids that are
right,
born
with autism. What I'm saying, though, is that somebody like Tony Madrigal, who actually mentioned, you know, the possible racial profiling on Halloween 5 or 6 years ago, he was they read the Riot Act to him. Every council member came and spoke at the microphone denouncing him as though, you know, such an idea was outlandish.
Yeah,
We'd never have such a thing.
Go ahead, Jason. I got a question. Did they sell the statue of Tom Scribner yet? Because I heard that they were going to sell it.
No, I think they are tempted. They are suggesting that they may retire the statue of, I guess, the bear spirit out at the Natural History Museum because its cock keeps getting broken off, and they claim it's because it's deteriorating. But that's an interesting story which Brent Adams has followed in video. But Jason, I'm going to roll on you. Anything you want to conclude with?
No, I just wanted to bring that up that. Before you guys go and memorialize or do any of that, I look back at his behavior. I don't approve of anybody being killed, but, you know, it's like, if a slave master got killed, I'm not going to go and sit and put up a memorial about him, even if he did die in brave circumstances, because I know the real him, and I've seen it, and what I saw was completely out of control and actually very scary. So I hope that brings a little karmic balance to this situation.
Thank you,
Jason. Have a good night, Robert.
All right, man. Thank you.
And I just want to say on his comments, one is that, indeed, I have a feeling that most of the black people in Santa Cruz are feeling that they are being discriminated against in one way or another, just for being black and standing out in the crowd, I think it has a lot to do with it, unfortunately. But I can say personally that I don't see it in my world. You know, the last two winners of one of my shows were both black people, both very talented, and I wouldn't stand in the way of their success if I had any chance in hell. I want to do everything I can to promote these people and accept them in our community. And I don't see a lot of people that are actually in my world that actually discriminates. But there are plenty of people here, but I don't think they're just discriminating against black people. I think they're just discriminating against anybody that doesn't fit their class. If you're not an upper white, multi business type of thing, melted car garage type person. Everybody else is not really counted here. And I think I feel that being a homeless person a lot. I know a lot of other people that feel discriminated against because of their standing in the community more than anything else. And I know here on this program it gets brought up regularly of how if you don't fit the profile, you're going to be targeted by the different organizations here that bring down the law. And that part, again, is all the fear-mongering. And the fact that you're out there in Arkansas or wherever you are thinking there's riots downtown now and it's out of control. Well, I was downtown all day today, and it's a beautiful day in Santa Cruz. I walked up and down the Garden Mall, and everybody was smiling and having a good time. And, you know, the other thing that I want to comment on, his comments were that karma is a big word, folks, that, you know, you do bad things to good people, it's going to catch up to you. And I'm not saying anything about any of that, but I do know karma has a weird biting you in the ass when you least expect it. And so if that's what indeed happened, well, there you go.
You know, Huff, which met yesterday, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the group I'm with, had a discussed the issue of the killings of Baker and Butler, the shooting death that happened on Tuesday, and the death of, I guess, Goulet, I'm not sure how you pronounce his name, Jeremy Goulet, who...
believe it or not, I've heard six different names for this guy.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, assume I'm taking it from a questionable source, the Sentinel, anyway, but we came up with a resolution. There was a lot of debate, because, see, the problem with people like Butler and Baker is that they have treated homeless people badly. And our advocacy group is concerned with making sure that doesn't happen. And some of the reasons that homeless people are treated badly has to do with the fact that police enforce bad laws. And you might say, well, they're just enforcing the law. But in fact, of course, some police officers tend to get even more carried away with this issue. And in the distant past, and not terribly distant past, Lauren Butchie Baker was one of those officers. Now, before going into any of the details, and I've criticized Baker before on this show in detail and played others' criticisms of him, I want to make sure there's something more recent, because I don't want to be in a position of raking over past abuses by an officer, real as they were, and real as current abuses are with the general police department, which have to be raked over and have to be exposed. But, you know, one always has the hope, particularly if someone's died recently, that there was some kind of progress or regeneration or maybe change. And so before I do my analysis of Lauren Baker and Elizabeth Butler, which I will, I want to give people an opportunity to weigh in on what's happened with them recently. Baker was a detective, I believe, and Butler was to some extent sometimes on the downtown beat, but not recently so much. And I don't have a lot of information on that, and so I'm not going to start shooting at them, so to speak, without having a clear sense of what's happening with them recently. But Huff did come up with this resolution, which I supported. It reads as follows: Huff extends our deepest condolences to the family, friends, and co-workers of Detective Elizabeth Butler, Sergeant Lauren Butchie Baker, and Santa Cruz resident and Marine veteran Jeremy Goulet, who were shot and killed on February 26th. We don't know what happened to those people, really. We're getting this kind of, they went to the front door and they got shot dead, and later he had their gun and took the police car and all that. But we don't really know what went down. It may have been perfectly appropriate police procedure, or it may have been the kinds of abuses that we heard. And I know, because Baker is the only officer who I've successfully sued for damages in this city. You know, I actually got $5,000 from him in the city because false arrests, because he was bad. That was 10 years ago. So who knows? I said maybe he's improved. But we don't have information really about what went down in that encounter between these two police officers and Jeremy Goulet. And that's what we need to know. We do know that three people are dead. And that's obviously bad. No question about it. And then the rest of the resolution read, in an incident which is still under investigation, we urge common restraint in the hope that law enforcement will not use this incident as a rationale to express increased hostility toward homeless people who have no other option than to remain in public spaces. That's, you know, pretty straightforward. It was a little, you know, I don't like to pander. I think that's what why Jason Pascal, the previous caller, just called in to a notion that because everyone else, because the police chief is out there saying we're all going to, you know, mourn the situation. Nobody mourned for the people, homeless people who died, or the four people who died in prison last year in our jail. Nobody fucking mourned for them. You know, we didn't hear the police chief declaring a day of mourning for the people who have died as a consequence of, you know, questionable policing, for example. All we get is the smear job afterward of how bad these people were. You know, oh, they were killers, they were crazy, they were drug addicted. You name it. All this crap comes up suddenly. They dig it out of the, you know, it comes out
and
of the
woodwork.
And
that's not anything new, Robert. You
no,
know, these police agencies have been using this for years and years. And
Right. Finally
now with, I guess you could say, DNA evidencing, it's making it a lot harder for them to just incriminate somebody like they used to. But, you know, they're still planting evidence on computers. You know, you're a child molester now, and you know, these people were bad. I think I heard something about him having prior convictions for abuse in Hawaii or something like that. And so they're already trying to smear this guy. And as Robert said, man, we weren't there. If there was anybody there, I'd love for you to call us or get a hold of me at Community TV, and we'll put you on. Just tell us what really happened.
I mean, it looks, you know, one gets, I mean, again, you got all these police records that come rolling up. But, I mean, it looks like the guy has had a problem with voyeurism. He was a peeper. He was a Marine. He had some problems there. And he had, you know, his own family seems to be suggesting that he suggested he was, I don't know whether the word wasn't really disturbed, but, you know, it was something to the effect of, you know, as a predilection for violating the privacy and rights and persons of, you know, women who he takes a hankering to. So, you know, but again, you know, this is something I don't really want to get into at great length because I don't have any information on it. I'm going to babble about, you know, so what? So I'm not going to babble any more about it. I want to get back to what we were discussing before, which has to do with upcoming, and because this is important, Community TV will be one of the media through which we can learn the answers to these questions, which people who will not be highlighted in the Sentinel, who will not be, the letters will not appear in SantaCruz.com or the Weekly. You won't get in there. I've tried. Sometimes I can get in, sometimes I can't. Most recently I can't. But your show and other shows on Community TV and shows on free radio will broadcast more information when we get it. So let's talk about how can we save Community TV. I guess 9 o'clock people can come to the Board of Supervisors, 5th floor of the county building, Tuesday, and that'll be, what, February? Do we know the date on that?
Oh, gosh. It's the 19th, folks. It's the 19th.
But, I mean, you can come next week,
March,
too.
March 19th.
March the 19th, 12th.
It's going to be next week.
It's going to be the 5th. It'll be the 5th. And then you can come again on the 12th, and then you can come again on the 19th. But you can also contact the Board of Supervisors during the day. Unfortunately, you can't reach them during the night or on the weekends because they don't bother to put in an answering machine. Thank you very much. Unlike the City Council, which at least, even though they don't listen to you, you can know that you can have your stuff recorded on their machine, and they're theoretically going to hear what you say before they erase it. So you can call them 24 hours a day. Not so the much better paid and more powerful Board of Supervisors, which hasn't bothered to put in an answering machine. I requested that of Supervisor Leopold and his staff half a year ago, when I also looked for information about how are they enforcing the medical marijuana low-income provisions that what they were putting into their ordinance, which is something we were going to talk about today, too, although...
And I want to talk about that, too. We'll get to that real soon.
We can talk about that. But if you want, come to this...
There's another meeting, too, folks. March 11th at Community TV, which is at 816 Pacific Avenue, we're going to have our board of directors meeting, and as much public comment at that point to get these guys motivated too. I mean, there's really half of our board is appointed through government agencies, and the other half is elected. Well, they even took away our election rights with this fear-mongering that they're going to shut us down unless we gave away our right to vote. So we gave away our right to vote, and now we can't elect board members anymore. It's all appointed. But these guys need a little wake-up call, too. If we can get a good showing of support from the community and not just me saying, hey, folks, we need to save Community TV, I think that'll be a big help.
When and where is this meeting?
So... this coming Tuesday, that's the Board of Supervisors at the county. March 11th is a Board of Directors meeting at Community TV. March 19th, we're back at the Board of Supervisors.
What time on March 11th? Tell people the address of Community TV.
The March 11th is 5:30, I think. It could change to 6, but it was 5:30 today.
And the address is?
816 Pacific Avenue. That's right there in the Garden Mall next to Pipeline and Salvation Army and all that.
So there are about four meetings coming up people can either get to, or you can contact either the Board of Directors, and you'll be sending me an email with all the email addresses of the Board of Directors, so people can contact them by email and let them know that what their concerns are, and I'll be happy to put that out. I also suggest you post it on Indie Media, Santa Cruz Indie Media. People can do it there. March 11th is actually March 5th, Tuesday, 9 o'clock, Board of Supervisors, 5th floor of the county building. March 11th, the next Monday, that's going to be at 816 Pacific Avenue, Community TV, 5:30, maybe 6 in the evening. And then the next day, March 12th, again at the Board of Supervisors at 9 o'clock in the morning, oral communication. And then a week after that, it won't be oral communication. It'll be an actual agenda item, probably coming up 9:30 or so. Or it depends. It can vary at a time. I'm not sure if it's on the consent agenda or if it's for a public hearing, but we'll have to see what that. The agenda is usually posted 72 hours in advance, or it's supposed to be. And you can go online to find that out. And also, if you contact me, I'll announce it as well. And you can make periodic announcements if you call into my show from wherever you are for a 5-minute call or something. Or you could just remind us that you want people to, you know, get in touch with these different groups, Board of Directors, Board of Supervisors, whatever. So,
yeah, and if you're a big company and corporation that really feels strongly about supporting Community TV, we certainly will take your money and we'll put out some sponsorship ads for you. I don't know if you've seen, you know, we actually will do short advertising sponsors spots for people that help support us through this transition. But most importantly, folks, we're just going to need your support. I mean, if you go out there and say to the community Board of Supervisors that Community TV means more than you than one cop, then please come out and say that. You know, it doesn't take much to keep us alive. I mean, truly, for less than what somebody paid for a commercial on the Super Bowl, we could be afloat for years to come. Not just 1 year, many years. And so, Plantronics, Seaside Corporation, you guys, come on, help us out. Become sponsors of our station. Sponsors of the show.
Some of my favorite groups, actually, my least favorite groups, but maybe they'll be good sponsors.
Well, that's what we're hoping. You know, we don't want to shun anybody. We're, you know, it takes the support of the community.
Well, let me turn now to medical marijuana because you know, it looks like the people who might have been wanting to call in haven't, and they sounded quite enthusiastic when I talked to them earlier today. Or interested anyway, and so I'm going to see if I can't persuade them to call on Sunday in the event that they don't call in today. Although maybe if you're listening, Felton Medical Marijuana Dispensers, dispensary folks, do give a call, 427-3772. And I also encourage anyone else listening who has any comments about Community TV or anything else we've been discussing who wants to call in, please do. The lines are open.
Give me a hard time.
427-3772.
Tell me you hate my show.
You can give any of us a hard time, a soft time, or any time in between. But you had some thoughts on medical marijuana. The only thing I wanted to say before you begin is I've recently noted in the paper this medieval inquisitional drug war paranoia sensation hysteria that has been generated by groups like Take Back Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Neighbors, ranting about a drug tolerant attitude, which really sounds like from the bowels of the conservative elements of the police department is what it sounds like to me. Maybe the conservative staff in Santa Cruz, have had impacts not just on the destruction of safe needle exchange and distribution, but also on an attempt to open a second medical marijuana dispensary. We've already seen this kind of paranoia put a ban on all dispensaries in the city of Santa Cruz over two. We're only allowed to have two. You know, you can have dozens of bars. I don't know how many there are dozens, but probably many bars, many tobacco outlets, but only and many pharmacies, which sell much more toxic medications than medical marijuana, and cause much more devastation, obviously, even than heroin and methadone, you know, for that matter.
prescription drugs kill 90% of people from any sort of drug death related. 90%.
And your source, Mr.
It's Bobby Ackerley, Santa Cruz.
Oh, not got, necessarily the most he's mellow source.
He's got the information on that, and he preaches it to me on a daily basis.
He does preach it, but have him tell you where he's getting it from.
It's out there, folks. It's pretty darn close.
I mean, people are being doped to the gills, and that they're ranting about illegal drugs. I mean, it's really kind of
Oxycontin, all those opium derivatives.
I was listening to a medieval history series, which you can get out of the library, talking about how Philip II of France was attacking the papacy. And the way he was attacking the papacy by claiming the papacy is full of shit, as far as I'm concerned. But in the Middle Ages, the kind of arguments they used against the Pope are similar to the arguments, I think, that are used, you know, to deal in the drug war as well. I mean, they claimed that the Pope was... He was selling offices, which he was, and so were all the rest of the Roman Catholic Church in different areas, and so were the kings of the different of medieval Europe. That's called simony. I think it's simony or simony, one of the two. Simony, I think it is. And they were also engaging in... I don't think they got into the pedophile practice, but they did claim that the Pope had a demon, a little demon that he kept in his room that he sent out, you know, into the populace. And people testified under oath they had seen this demon running around Rome. And so, I mean, you have these weird claims that people believe and just like they credulously believe this stuff about needles and drugs and the dangers of homeless individuals. I mean, it's a sickness, and it's a kind of it's a mental illness, which is not something you get as an individual, but something that's spread as a fear in the community, I think.
Well, and a lot of people, it's just been brought down through their DNA. You know, if you recall back in the 1600s, you would be tortured into believing in God. If you did not believe in Jesus Christ, they would torture
God.
You.
Yeah, you can't believe in the Muslim God. You can't believe in the Jewish God.
With that sort of upbringing
in
our past, it's not too hard to believe that some people just go over the deep end with this and believe what they're told.
You know, I don't
and it really brings me back to that whole Orwellian
concept. We're all susceptible to that, and I think that's the danger. I mean, because, you know, you can't be an expert on everything. If there's a certain thing in the, you know, people, your friends are telling you this, even if they are getting it from some bizarre source, you may start believing stuff that has no basis in reality, but it's just it's a hysterical
human nature, isn't it?
Well, it's the nature of, I don't know if it's our basic human nature, but it certainly is something that we have to be believing.
We like to be understanding. Well, we like to take people for their face value that they're good. That's part of nature.
You can't be an expert on everything, and a lot of the time we're forced into pigeonholes where we can only become, you know, qualified on certain things, and we don't. The things we should be qualified on, we're not. So, for instance, instead of learning algebra or learning, you know, U.S. history from the Custer point of view, we should be learning basic medical tactics on how to deal with medical problems. We should be learning basic legal realities that we have to deal with when we're dealing with law. Self-defense. Things of this sort that are practical, meaningful, important things that are often left to experts. Ordinary human beings need to have more access to, and I don't think we do. But let me get back to my main subject here, you were going to talk about medical marijuana.
Yeah.
And the reason I brought it up was because of this... this guy, I think his name is Turner or Taylor, he's attempting to get a second dispensary open after the Ken Sampson's lime kiln closed last year. There's an opening for another one. He needs to get a variance because you need to get a variance. They made it difficult to open medical marijuana centers. And he wants to open it in Harvey West. And there's this big wave, which Take Back Santa Cruz takes credit for, of opposition to this because it's going to be involved with crime and homeless camps and problems for residents, though there are no such claims about Lisa Milano's medical marijuana dispensary, which has been open for 6 years. I've got some negative criticism of Lisa Milano's dispensary and how it treats low-income people, but the police have no complaints about it. The staff, they often malign, because I think they're full of shit often, has no complaints about it. But in this group, and this mentality that we are now suffering under, is becoming so intense that we are seeing an attack on essentially not just a harmless, but a beneficial herb that is being used to put more and more people in jail. It hasn't stopped. It's gotten worse. And in the Sentinel, and I'm only taking it from the Sentinel because I haven't talked to the guy who's trying to do this permit, and I should, it appears he is backing down. He's sort of putting off his attempt to get a planning commission hearing on his permit application, and that's why I brought it up. But why don't you go ahead with your thoughts?
Well, those are all, you know, good points, and, you know, let's just start with the medical facts here right now, that concentrates of THC are now being proven to destroy certain cancer cells. If you go to a website, Berkeley Organics, they're coming up with research and techniques that are actually being proven in the laboratory circumstances that we're curing diseases, folks, that there have not been cures for before. That's not to say that everybody is in that position. You know, most of us that use medical marijuana use it for aches and pains, where pills and opium substances that are extremely addictive that you can get carried away with and literally die from without a blink of an eye are greatly accepted. And yet medical marijuana, which is so valuable in so many different ways, is being shunned as the evil drug. Well, you know who's funding all that. It's the pharmaceutical companies. They've been doing this for the whole time. This is just my feeling. I don't have any facts on this, folks. But since medical marijuana has been introduced and has been used, prescription drug sales have dropped 25%. And that is causing a huge uproar in the pharmaceutical industry.
Wait a minute. Where are you getting the 25%?
That's just a figure that I pulled out of the air.
Watch out for those.
And
folks,
so I'm telling you up front.
I'm not saying it isn't true, but I've got no basis for saying
that. It's dropped considerably. I don't know what the exact figures are, but that's a big dump. 25% of the funding of prescription painkillers and pain relief.
Yeah, but it's a big jump. It's not based on any evidence. So why are we talking about
it? Well, what's happening is it's a bite-back situation where the pharmaceutical companies need to start criminalizing and making mystiques about medical marijuana that aren't true. So we'll get off of that and get back on the
prescription
drugs.
I got a couple
of
questions for you as the devil's advocate. Do you have any evidence that the pharmaceutical industries are directly criticizing marijuana? If so, please present it right here.
Well, let's go online and let's see. I don't have time to do that now.
But I'd be happy to have you do that and bring it to the show if you're interested.
Yeah, well, let's do that.
But see, it's easy, and I talk about the pharmaceutical.
And if anybody out there in the community knows anything about this, give us a shout. Give us a call. Let us know some of these numbers.
Sure. It's just, I think, to me, it's really important that we, when we address the hysteria, we address it with solid stats, as much as we can find them. And so, much as I tend to, I'm sympathetic to what you say, I want to make sure that we're actually on solid ground here. No, I haven't heard Johnson & Johnson or whatever the hell the pharmaceutical companies are specifically stating, we don't like marijuana, or keep it on the, federal Schedule 1. I haven't heard anybody say that. I hear that from a lot of drug warriors. I hear that from police departments. I hear that from, officials in the federal government who are supposed to be liberals, and from some legislators. But I haven't heard that, and I haven't listened, and I haven't really. But if somebody has evidence, I'd like to see that.
I'm sure it's out there.
Pharmaceutical companies are probably willing to, to cook up marijuana concoctions and form cigarette companies that are marijuana cigarettes that are, multi-billion-dollar industries in the same way that they're doing
and
currently.
Actually, here in California, Philip Morris has quite a few acres of medical marijuana fields just for that purpose, where they can package and distribute marijuana like cigarettes.
And I'm also interested in the local angle on this stuff more than anything else.
Let's get back to the local and how low-income people are supposed to get around these rules and regulations. The last time I was on your show and we talked about this, we were looking for doctors who would provide prescriptions for people, and a couple things came up and I followed through on those, and even through the homeless lack of services center, as you so rightfully put it so many times, they will not give you a prescription. The county doctors will not give you a prescription, that you literally have to go and pay one of these organizations that provide prescriptions. There's no benefit out there for Medicruz, Medi-Cal patients to get a prescription to medical marijuana. As far as I know, in this county, because I've tried. And if you know somebody out there that'll give me a prescription for free with my MediCruise Advantage card, I'd certainly like to hear who that is.
Call in at 427-3772 to help this sufferer here before he gets arrested and dragged away from the studio.
Which is what's going to happen, folks. You know, for us people that can't afford to pay the $100 that they're asking to get a prescription here in Santa Cruz, and you have to do that every year. It's not like it's my chronic feet problem are going to go away tomorrow. I wake up and I have a nail in my foot with a hammer being driven into it, and it hurts like hell. The only relief I can be given is the opportunity to smoke a joint to ease the pain. It doesn't make the pain go away, but I tolerate it, and it's called pain management. And when my doctor said, well, I can cut you a prescription for some serious painkillers, but you're just going to get strung out on them. And then I think about my mother ODing on prescription pills and passing out on the floor, foaming at the mouth. I realized that, no, that's not the path I'd like to take. And if I can smoke a joint and tolerate the pain, well, God bless whoever can get that to us. And so it's a small thing, but yet nature provides this for free. And yet so many people feel that this is a great opportunity to monopolize on our abundances that God has given us. And
or to create huge taboos and fears, you know, that's the other
fear mongering is what I've been saying the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, if we can scare you into taking a prescription pill as opposed to smoking a joint, then we've succeeded in our goal.
And there's another a bill coming up before the state legislature which is trying to require people who medical marijuana users, those who are rich enough or fortunate enough to be able to get access to, not a prescription, since you still can't get a prescription for medical marijuana, you can get a recommendation. You can get a written statement from a physician that it helps you, that you think it helps you, and that they acknowledge that and they feel that probably has some merit, or they're at least documenting that. But that if this bill is sort of similar to, I think, the bill in Washington or Colorado. I think it's Washington State, which the marijuana advocates really were afraid of, marijuana legalization advocates, because they got, you know, Washington State to somewhat legalize small quantities of marijuana. But they also, there's now a requirement that allows police to stop you on the road. And if you have any marijuana in your system, that can be the however well you are in terms of your ability to drive, ability to do a sobriety test, it doesn't matter. It will become a basis for losing your license or getting some kind of a citation, and that is what.
And also, government assistance, all related to a medical
marijuana
conviction
up in California, and it is being pressed.
It's been a food stamps thing all along. If you have a drug conviction, you don't get food stamps.
Right, but I'm not talking about a drug conviction. I'm talking about a person with a medical marijuana script of some kind. It doesn't have to be. It can't be a prescription, but whatever, who is using medical marijuana for a legitimate purpose. But if they're driving and there's any kind of marijuana in their system, this is a bill that hasn't yet passed, but I was reading about it today or the day before, and it's an attempt, again, part of this drug war hysteria that has little to do with the real requirements of public safety for people who are operating vehicles. Now, there's an additional consideration that they're going to first give you a sobriety test of some other kind, and then they will give you this THC test if this passes. And I think people need to really, become aware of this. And I think local officials should speak out about it. I mean, I'd like to see not just great memorial services for dead police officers and also dead homeless people, which I think is
and dead people in jail. That's the saddest part.
And dead people in jail. But I'd like to see, less dead people through, the overdoses on these other drugs, which we don't hear that much about, I don't think. I mean, I don't.
It's swept under the rug.
I'd like to. I don't know where we would go to get. I guess the coroner's office we'd go to get the stats on how many people died of overdoses of legal prescription drugs in Santa Cruz County for the last 2 or 3 years. How does that compare with, meth and heroin overdoses outside? I don't know. But I think we need to know, and that's the kind of thing that we need all you listeners out there, if you want to get on the bandwagon and try to get more information for what's really going on and not what some ideologues on the right wing would like to see us do, which is less drug tolerance and ban marijuana sales except, you know, under the most rigorous of circumstances, drive all the homeless out of the area, destroy homeless camps and property, set up this absurd one-to-one needle exchange notion, which makes it much less likely that needles will be safely turned in and that people will use clean needles. And isn't it going to stop the distribution of needles because people will buy them? You know, if you're going to steal enough to, you know, buy some heroin, you'll steal enough to buy 30 needles at the pharmacy. You know,
I mean, steal the needles.
So, I'm not sure where you can steal. I guess you could steal them from a pharmacy. I don't know. Anyway, so if you're interested, give a call to the Huff line, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's off air in case you don't want to be needled about this issue too much. Or you can call on air and have your thoughts, 427-3772, broadcast out to the millions, including, I'm sure, our listening police officers, perhaps, are keeping an ear.
You can count on that.
Not necessarily. Sometimes police officers listen, sometimes they don't.
They might be taping it if we're lucky.
Well, hey, this show is our archive. We don't. I'm not afraid of anything I say. It goes out there, and if anybody wants to hear it again and hold me to what I'm saying, please do. You can find the archives of the show on the Huff website, huffsantacruz.org, huffsantacruz.org. In the studio with me is Sandra Lee, who's the producer of a number of shows, Issues, Spilly Chilies, Willie Schmilly,
Bowl of Rock.
Bowl of Rock. Sorry about that. He rocks with a bowl of rocks. So she rocks with a bowl of rocks.
He/she any given day, folks.
In any case, it depends on, you know, a little gender uncertainty. Sometimes, perhaps. But in any case, you can call in 427-3772. I'm going to take a musical break to give me a chance to clear my throat a couple of times and give Sandra a chance to use the bathroom if she wants, and we'll see what's next.
I wonder what else is hiding out there that no one has discovered yet.
Wonder if there are stars with expectations that haven't been met.
I wonder if the sun gets tired of burning and what magic fuel is making it thrive.
I wonder how long we'll just keep on turning. And I wonder if Angelian is still alive.
Each day I walk along roads that wind through this town, and to my dismay, my feet are always aware of the ground, but my mind's a million miles away.
My brain is perpetually scanning for a time coming soon that will bow. If I could just stop adventure planning, who knows, I might be on an adventure. Now
I wonder if I will find time when I live with a mind that is free of congestion. So many hours are spent wanting something, and all that it does is just flood me with questions.
Like, where will I find,
where will
it?
I find it?
What will it be
will
like?
And try.
But it's enough to just get through a day full of nonsense. I have to survive.
I wonder if I'm starting to doubt there are feelings of contentment at last. There's gotta be something that's out there that'll make me happy at last.
I want a magic dog that takes care of itself, that doesn't bark or bite.
I want to be the one that's happening to someone inside.
And that was More Life from the musical Now, Here, and This. Now, Here, This. I'm in the studio with Sandra Lee, and we are talking about a variety of subjects. I'm kind of
I just wanted to make a comment about that Ann Jillian song. I love Ann Jillian. She was so cute. But anyway, that was a good song.
Okay. I'm going to play, you know, I'm going to move from Needle Exchange, unless you have new info on Needle Exchange.
Well, I just want to put out to the community that, you know, we've got the first show that we filmed on this subject. It's going to start airing March 6th on Community TV, channels 27 in Santa Cruz and 73.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what the times are, but there's a variety of times where you can catch this program. And it was a half-hour show. We got to the end of it, and we were realizing that we didn't even scratch the surface of all the important issues that we really need to discuss.
And what we were talking was the political implications of the shutdown of the Needle Exchange in Santa Cruz by right-wing ideologues. That's, at least that's how I looked at it.
But that's a pretty good summary of it, more technical than I would have put it. But what ended up happening is we finished the show realizing that there was a lot more information that we needed to get out to the public, and we also need to get the support of the people. So we're going to go back into the studio on March 23rd at 1 o'clock. That's at CTV again. And if you have any input or comments about the Needle Exchange program or lack of, we would invite you to come down to the station and be part of that. We're going to start setting up about one, but if you're a member of the community and want to be on the air and make a statement, we'd love to have you show up about 2 o'clock. And we'll probably be done about 3:30, so plan on being there for a little while. We don't know when we'll squeak you in, but we'd love to see the community. Who cares about this issue? You know, you might not use needles. I sure don't. But that doesn't mean that other people in my life do. And I care for them, and I care for the community. And if you care, please make a point of either watching this show, coming down, being a part
it's
of the next
one. It's going to be an hour-long show? Or
the next one's going to be an hour one.
Uh-huh.
And then and we'll try to get as much information out to you guys as possible regarding new programs that might be started, old programs that have been discontinued, and any sort of information that we can get to you. We will certainly try to do that at that next show. But watch the first one. Get a feel for what we did. It's called The Politics of the Needle Exchange Program. Look for that, and hopefully you guys can get involved with the next one on March 23rd.
We're trying to call activist Steve Plaich right now to see if we can get any updates, and he's been unusually hard to reach during show times. I'm wondering if he's ducking me, but I don't know for sure, and it sounds like he, who knows, maybe he hasn't been able to pay his phone bill, although he's usually pretty good about that. But it looks like
your call has been forwarded to an
like
automatic voice
reach
message
him, but,
system.
But I will tell
Steve
him
Plaich.
That we're trying to find him, and
he's not available.
Yes, he's
at
not
the
available
tone,
at the moment.
Please record your message. When you have finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Thank you so much, Steve Plaich.
Hey,
I'm
Steve.
In the studio with Sandra Lee here, where we're eager to get your input, but there's only 20 minutes left to get it. So please start answering your phone during the show times and let us hear from you, 427-3772. And we'll see if Steve is able to get back to us on that. I'm going to turn now to some street interviews I was playing before. And if at any point you have some thoughts on any of this, Sandra, let me know. We can stop the show.
Well, just real quick, Robert, if you don't mind, before you get into that, just what ended up happening with your case at the federal court now? I got bits and pieces of... You won one, but lost one. Where are you with all that, if you don't mind?
Well, the only there are two cases that I were, you know, was recently involved in. One was a criminal case where the attempt to crush the Occupy movement, taken 2 months after the Occupy movement actually largely dissolved anyway, because they crushed it on the ground with police forces destroying the Occudome and then destroying the campground. And they did this without criminal prosecutions because I think they were aware they didn't want to, you know, get more attorneys involved. Attorneys were actually volunteering to help in the criminal cases that they had cooked up, and all the criminal charges against Occupy activists generally were dropped. Except 2 months later, a bunch of people, the Santa Cruz 11, were charged with, strangely enough, felonies never done before in Santa Cruz history against me, for instance, or anyone I know around political activism. For essentially being present in the building, this is the Wells Fargo leased former Coast Commercial Bank building that had been vacant for 3.5, now 4.5 years, and was being taken over by a group of people who are kind of loosely connected with Occupy, who wanted to establish a community center and possibly also dramatize the practices of Wells Fargo Bank and its abusive takeover of homes and destruction of lives across the country. And, of course, the immense bailout that the federal government went and did with the Wells Fargo and the other large banks. And, you know, people were there for 3 days. They left peacefully after many threats by the police department. And that was that. But it wasn't that. As far as the police were concerned, they wanted their pound of flesh. So they forwarded, I think it was 13 names to the for prosecution, or 14. One of them was Catherine Byers, city councilwoman, and of course she wasn't prosecuted. You don't prosecute city councilwomen for this sort of thing. But, and of course, there were hundreds of people, or several hundred people, who went in and out of that building when it was open and when it was, you know, somebody opened it up. They didn't break into it. Somebody got apparently a key from a lockbox and opened the building, and there was this occupation. I think it was a civil disobedient occupation at some point, but a lot of us went in and out who were reporting on it, including the Sentinel, including other media. And none of those people were charged with anything. But activists like myself, who are journalists, reporters, and so forth, were charged, faced 7 years in prison. Four people are still charged and face 7 years in prison. Brent Adams, who's a video journalist who's done a long series on the Occupy movement. You can find it on YouTube. He has a radio show on Free Radio every Tuesday night. I think it's called 10 to 12, or it's 11 to 12. It's called The Burning Flag. And there are three others, Angel Alcantara, Gabriela Ripley Phipps, and Cameron Laurendeau, who are still facing one felony and a misdemeanor charge for 4 years in prison. In theory, if they, and what are they charged with? They're not charged with vandalizing the building, really. They're not charged with any kind of property destruction, any kind of personal damage to any people. They're charged with trespass and with being in the building when someone else vandalized the building. And that conspiracy, you would think a conspiracy means, hey, let's go vandalize the building. And you kind of have a plan. I'll help you do it. But no,
there was no plan.
It was a spontaneous political action that happened, at least for many people. And this then became the basis for a vengeful activity by the police department, which I've talked about before on the air, because the police department the first night was unable to intimidate people into leaving. People stood up, they surrounded the building, or the front door of the building, and they told the police to back off. Now, in theory, the police could have arrested all those people for what's called lynching. Lynching is, you know, I guess it's taking away prisoners from police officers. I don't think they actually took them away, or they interfered with the, you know, the attempt to get into the building. And the police department chose not to do that. And I think for very good reason. There would have been a riot downtown to end all riots, because this was there were high emotions there, and Chief Vogel, I think, wisely decided to back off on that. But instead, he used this very kind of slimy, sinister, and underhanded approach, which went after political activists later. That's a lot of background. For the simple answer to your question is, as you may know, charges against me and three others, as had also previously been done with four others, leaving only four left out of the Santa Cruz 11, were all dismissed in January. But four are still going to trial in May, and they're also going to a hearing in March, which will seek to dismiss all the charges again. And they should be dismissed. Already, the DA has been sanctioned for a very rare process, told that she was violating court orders, that she didn't give up the evidence that she was supposed to give up to the defense repeatedly, in spite of being told again and again to give it up. She wouldn't do it, or she was too lazy to do it, or she was too incompetent to do it. Who knows why? It's hard to tell what happened with Rebecca Young, the DA in question. So there's a real cloud hanging over this case. And indeed, most recently, the deadline passed for the DA's office to appeal this decision by the court. This was a decision by the court that said, the DA's office is fucking with the court. Stop it. You didn't give us the evidence. You didn't give the defense the evidence. Instead of throwing out the case, which Burdick should have done and didn't do, or putting down a real complaint against him with the Bar Association, which he didn't do, and which I can't get my attorney to do either. These attorneys stick together. Yeah, they don't want to criticize each other. Yeah. they don't mind if they screw us all over for a year, but comes,
it's definitely a good old boys thing over there, and you know,
and
they,
old
they
girls,
don't send, they don't send emails to each other. They still use post-it notes. That's how secretive they are in their dealings.
Really?
With.
That's interesting.
No, it's very
interesting. In any case, that's the disposition of one case. Although I guess the DA has recently asked for an extension on the issue of the sanctions against Rebecca Young so that they can reply, and we're still waiting to find out what's happening with that, although it's a minor slap on the wrist, but it's an interesting slap on the wrist. It's never been done before that we've heard against the county of Santa Cruz's DA's office. But
boy, do they need it, too. You know,
big time.
You know, again, who knows what the numbers are, but I'd say there's a significant amount of cases that go through the court system in Santa Cruz County that are mishandled by the district attorney or agency prosecuting.
Well, particularly drug war cases and political cases, you know, and cases involving poor people. I mean, it is a scandalous, and of course, and it ruins lives, and it has very little to do with public safety and public welfare, and it's kind of like an inherited disease from the past. These institutions that we are all suffering under. The second case that was a civil lawsuit that I undertook and has been going on for 10 years. We thought it would be resolved fairly quickly because the city council arrested me for making a mock Nazi salute way back in 2002 when Mayor Chris Krohn shut down oral communication early and bullied several people in the audience, including one peace activist, a short woman named Susan Zeman. And we thought it was an obvious false arrest when they arrested me because I very silently gave a Nazi salute for 2 seconds, a silent one, and sat down.
And you would think that that's freedom of speech or expression.
You would think so, yeah. But you see, it offended one of the council members, ironically, supposedly the Liberal Green Party member, Tim Fitzmaurice, who, once these people get into power, unfortunately, they lose their original idealism, and they become infatuated.
We can spend a lot of time talking about that.
With that.
That's a good topic right there.
Yeah, it is. It's too bad. And that's, you know, it's... That's why you've got to. That's why the whole system of the Occupy movement was really so inspirational. They didn't want representatives at all. They wanted a whole new system of dealing with problems, and they started to find one. And then it was, for the moment, swept away. We'll see how deep the sweep was. In any case, what happened with my case was for 10 years it went back and forth through the courts. I finally got a trial last October, and the jury. Peculiarly, and even the two mayors, one of the mayors I talked to who was tried, Krohn, didn't expect to win. He expected we would win because it was so obvious. You can't falsely arrest someone for doing this. It's ridiculous. They found that there was not a false arrest. There was not all that. Everything was fine with that. And my attorneys, of course, who've been struggling to get some money out of this for 10 years, and I didn't pay them anything. This was all pro bono. They are still pursuing the case and looking for a second trial. I don't think they're going to get it, but it's possible they might. But recently, I think a couple of days ago, the judge certified the case, which he hadn't done. Usually the judge certifies the jury's verdict immediately after the jury comes in or soon after, and this time he didn't. And we thought, oh, well, maybe that means the judge himself could overturn the verdict.
Sure they could.
But, of course, he didn't. This is the same judge who twice refused to let us have a trial, so I didn't think he was going to overturn the verdict. That was my prediction, and unfortunately, I think I was right. But will the... And then now we attempt to get the judge on our motion to overturn the verdict, which isn't likely. And then there's the further possibility of appealing it to a higher court. But the problem is that once you have a judge who's given a trial... And a jury has made the decision. It's really hard to get the jury verdict overturned.
Right.
And so this is...
So you're going to just drop it in at this point?
Well, I'm not. I mean, the attorneys are taking it up because they've already invested so much time in it that they don't mind investing more time. I've always been of the opinion that I wish they were doing something else in terms of the sleeping ban or so forth, but that's a hard road to hoe. We've tried that twice before to get an injunction against the sleeping ban, and the problem with the attorneys is that they don't have it's not at the top of their priorities, so they'll start to do it, but then they'll delay it, they'll go on vacation, they'll do other things, and because they do the activists who are putting in most of the work get angry with them and say, we don't want to sit around and wait for you to do things. People are, you know, in real trouble right now. We have a similar situation with the whole problem of the sweeps of the camps, the illegal camps, where every camp in Santa Cruz is illegal. Any camp in Santa Cruz is illegal. So being homeless in Santa Cruz is illegal. And that is clearly, you know, not only isn't a violation of the Constitution, if you're a legal scholar, it's abusive bullshit. You can't, you know, people who are poor don't have options. You can't tell them it's illegal to sleep. You could tell them it's illegal to sleep here or there or in that bad place or in this place. But to say it's illegal to sleep anywhere at all, that is, say, somewhere, to tell them it's illegal to sleep somewhere is just wrong. You know, it's a form of torture. I mean, it has to be a form of torture if you look at it. And it's actually, you know, it's this way of doing what they did to the Okies or the Chinese or the Japanese. Get out of town. And you know, people like to pride themselves in America by saying, well, we don't do that anymore, you know. Of course, you know, if you're Islamic, good luck. You know, they do that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if, you know.
Because of 9/11.
Because, well, before that, you know, Clinton established
this was way before
terrorism bills, too.
This whole Occupy thing was started back in 98 with the Clinton administration.
You mean the terrorism stuff?
No, I'm talking about the Occupy stuff. This whole recession, it was started many, many years ago.
Oh, you're talking about the Glass-Steagall Act, that sort of thing?
The guy that's being nominated right now for a big position actually put in the deregulation of the banks to start the whole thing down the road. And then when
Bush, the Obama regime is, you know, it's Republican light is all it is.
Bush regime, they changed the bankruptcy laws. First thing they did when they came into office was change bankruptcy laws.
In any case, you know, we have a situation in Santa Cruz where people are finally beginning to get together. I saw it happening on Wednesday. Concerned with, they're still not, they have different opinions. They're fighting among themselves, not fighting, they're disagreeing among themselves as to how to proceed with, you know, establishing a sanctuary camp. But you have, you know, these prospects happening at the state level. Tom Emiliano's homeless bill of rights has been presented, and that has already passed in Rhode Island, at least an earlier version of it. And I'm not sure how effective it is, but the idea of reaffirming rights is really important, and more important than putting it on paper, and this is the thing that really is the test for us, is making them real on the streets. And doing that at the time when police officers are, you know, mourning the death of two other police officers, or, you know, backed suddenly by these huge right-wing vigilante groups that are, you know, suddenly have their members on the city council and in public commissions who are spreading this toxic and venomous mythology around about, you know, the evil homeless people and, you know, shut down the homeless services center. I mean, I call it the homeless lack of services center because it's abusive to disabled people and they don't respond, they're not transparent. But they do provide some services. They do provide a small amount of shelter for people, and they provide meals twice a day, and they do provide mail service and laundry services. I think you got to pay for the mail services. And it has the only 24-hour restrooms in town, unless you happen to be, you know that, you know, the gas station
owner. Is that new?
It happened under Douglas. It's fairly new.
Because I remember just recently hearing that there were no facilities.
There are no facilities in the downtown area for 24-hour restrooms. But the only one that was set, it was opened by Doug Loisel before they kicked him out as a sex offender, and in a case that was settled later in Los Angeles. He was one of the best directors of the Homeless Lack of Services Center. Now we've got Monica Martinez, who, along with Don Lane, is doing this sort of pin-up show for the 180-180 program, which is a program to, you know, give a
hug. We talked about that on the show.
We did, and it's not a bad idea, but it also is a way of, however, distracting from what we need is the 2000-2000 program, which deals with people in Santa Cruz, not 180 people, you know. And, you know, you've got to set up campgrounds, or you've got to give people the right to sleep in certain areas without having to be afraid of being arrested or having their property stolen by police.
Well, you know, Robert, it just kills me that, you know, and don't get me wrong, folks, I'm a supporter of the Warriors thing, even though they're taking away all our parking, but they were able to put up this huge building that can seat 4,000 people.
4.1 million.
In a matter of 6 months, from start to finish, doors open. Now, why in the world can we not create a facility in 6 months to house the homeless people I just don't understand why there's such a disparity between the way we handle this instance versus the way we handled the Warriors. And that part just kills me. And now the fact that they're taking away all the free parking downtown for their events. Nobody was told about that happening when they put this all through. They just decide to take whole parking lots and put up signs, no parking for VIPs only, for staff only. Nobody said that that was going to happen when they proposed this stadium there. One of the big things was about parking. Where are you going to park all these people?
I remember that actually came to city council, but again, it wasn't very widely promulgated.
So they can build this huge, huge venue that's safe and sound for 4,000 people, but yet we can't find homeless for 2,000 people, a place for them to sleep where they'll be safe, a roof over their head when it's freezing cold. I mean, it seems to me it's a no-brainer, folks. The money's there. There's plenty of money. We just don't have the right motivation in our government leaders to take care of this.
Oh, it would be drug tolerant. They'd have a lot of needles. They'd be misusing drugs. They would be dirty and filthy. It would be a magnet effect. They would all come to town.
Everybody would come to Santa Cruz.
You hear this litany of horse shit that just, it's overwhelming. The stench is overwhelming. And the bigotry involved is even worse.
It's amazing. We consider ourselves so liberal.
I mean,
Santa Cruz.
Look at Don Miller. Don Miller, the Sentinel writer, recently came out with an editorial about the shootings of Baker and Butler, which I'll talk about on my next show, which will be Sunday, by the way, folks. And it's about 5 minutes left in the show, so if you want to call in and you got a question for Sandra or you got a comment about community TV or about any of these other issues, now's the time to call 427-3772.
And I just want to take a second to thank all you folks out there for listening and being aware. You know, you guys are the coolest to actually take time out of your life to worry about things that are going on in the community. I applaud each and every one of you if you're in my voice range right now. Thank you. Thank you so much for being who you are and what you do for our community.
Yeah, and I'm hoping that we can get Bill or Eugene from Salinas to call in on Sunday. I'm going to see what I can do to get that happening. And also Kelly or Ken from up Felton Way with the dispensaries up there and talk about what's going on. I had heard that there's supposedly a low-income requirement for dispensaries in the county, medical marijuana dispensaries in the county, to provide low-income marijuana at a very, I think, free, to provide for some kind of low-income marijuana.
Well, I know WAM was doing that for a while.
But not for people who aren't in WAM, though.
Yeah, you had to be a member of
That's a small number of people. And, you know, I'm always glad, you know, I'm supportive of WAM's struggle with the feds. I'm supportive of the fact that they were there originally. I'm very critical of the fact that they've maintained a monopoly for years. They said nothing whatsoever about, you know, the fact that there were no medical marijuana dispensaries in Santa Cruz that were legal from 2000 to 2005. I hear nothing from them about the needle hysteria. I hear nothing from them on subjects that they should be talking about.
They have
credibility. They don't say shit. And I'm sorry, you know, Valerie, you're not Saint Valerie to me when you keep your mouth shut on these issues, when you aren't leading and standing up to this madness. And I say the same thing about Steve Plaich, you know. I mean, Steve at least comes on the show and talks with you. But, you know, I hear him, you know, he's trying to, it's only politically possible to have a kind of a vague one-for-one sort of plus policy. What you need is free fucking needle distribution where needles are needed. If you need 30 needles, then you fucking need 30 needles. Sorry, folks, that's just the reality. What you need are money put into needle disposal centers so that can be safely disposed of. That apparently was much more the case about 10 years ago before the state funding was cut off. You know, and so that's my understanding of the situation, limited as it is. Coming up next on the show is Uncle Dennis is from the cream to the dregs. You can dip your mind in nostalgia. Go back to the 60s and 70s. He will play some of those fine discs you see on the wall behind you, Sandra. Many a
Dixie
record.
Dixie Dregs, I remember them well.
I know
who the Dregs are.
It's from the cream to the Dregs. I mean, I'm the cream, he's the Dreg. Well, we're all creaming around here, and you can cream with old Uncle Dennis.
Cream corn.
And we all need to do a little more creaming and a little less dreaming, as far as I'm concerned. That's always a good thing. I'll be back on Sunday with more. Saturday, I want to remind you, Food Not Bomb serves at 4 o'clock at the main post office. And at 5:30, if you're interested in the Sanctuary for Sleepers, come down. It's also the Occupy Santa Cruz. We'll be meeting there. And if you want to get in touch with me between times, if you see things happening on the streets, let me know. And also post what accounts you see on Santa Cruz Indie Media. My number is off air is 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And Sandra, let you put in a pitch again before we go for whatever's
awesome.
Coming up.
Thank you so much, Robert, for giving me this opportunity tonight. And thanks again to the people out there. Community TV needs your support, folks. We need your support today. We need your support Tuesday morning at the County Board of Supervisors meeting for oral communications, where you can come and say up to 3 minutes worth of your feelings for Community TV.
Nine
we
o'clock.
Need your support. 9 o'clock in the morning, sharp. Then also at Community TV on the 11th, and then back at the Board of Supervisors on the 19th. Be part of the next Needle Exchange program on the 23rd. And support your local establishments. All of them are so wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for listening to me, and enjoy the music.
And that's about it for Bathurst Beer's Broadsides. Talk to you on Sunday. I'm now going to have to inflict Uncle Dennis on you. He will be here. I'm not sure what he has in mind. He probably has some booze. He has some booze with him. He's usually boozing it up. And he will, of course, call it by other names. But the man is obviously a terminal alcoholic. I don't want to be critical here at this point, but look at
that. Well, we're all terminal, Robert.
Yes, indeed. That's certainly true. The rosy red look of his nose makes me think of old Saint Nick, but you can be the judge.
Well, it's better than the rosy red, well, whatever.
Indeed, indeed. Thanks, Sandra, for coming in.
Thanks, Robert. I'll see you next time.
All right, man.
And again, come on the show Wednesday.
Will do.
Wednesday.
And I'm
going to have the executive director of the station on with hopefully Neil Coonerty.
Oh, boy. My favorite guy. All right. We'll talk.
Hey, take care, Dad.
Oh, give me a break. I couldn't be more excited, I must say. I couldn't sleep a wink last night. It was making me mental. I mean, I can't believe that I, Ed Grimley, was asked to perform for the amazing Suncoast Middle School annual PTA Pancake Supper. Like, I suppose you could do better than that. No way. It's almost as insane as the time I got to meet Pat Sajak, who's a pretty decent guy, I must say. Oh, what am I thinking? Like, today should be about Pat Sajak. No way.
But then again, maybe it should. It's difficult to say.
No, today is about.
Today is about.
Today.
Today.
Today
is about.
Dazzle.
I am knocking them down.
You make Shane Fessler laugh so hard, Gatorade came out his nose.
My dad has helped me get my script together, and my mom has helped me get my hair stuck up into a point. My costume is perfect. A collared shirt, button to the top, and high-waisted pant with just a hint of moose knuckle.
Amazement he enjoys.
You know what moose knuckle is, don't you?
Camel toe bar boys.
I'm a very gentle, sensitive kid. While my brother is playing baseball, I spend hours lying on a living room floor, reading the Encyclopedia Britannica, or tenderly pressing my lips to the screen of our TV console when Captain James T. Kirk is on the other side of the glass. One morning, my mother flies in my bedroom and demands,
"Why are there lip marks all over the TV set?"
For reasons that I cannot fully explain, something inside me says, "Don't tell her." One day, I'm leafing through the encyclopedia trying to find a picture of Michelangelo's David when I stumble across a passage about
dazzle.
In World War I, the military used to paint battleships with wild eye-catching patterns. This dazzle camouflage confused the enemy's rangefinders so huge boats could hide in plain sight and bomber planes would just pass them by. A light bulb goes off. If I could dazzle everyone around me, I could hide in plain sight. Then maybe I would hear Shane Fessler say,
"Dude, you're funny,"
instead of,
"Dude, you're a faggot."
So I tuck away quiet me, sensitive me, and I become Dazzle Me. And I have a million different cards in my Razzle Dazzle deck.
Class Clown Camouflage.
Look at me, I teach driver's ed.
Joe Cool Camouflage.
This field trip sucks.
Girlfriend Camouflage.
Yep, I have girlfriends from the second grade all the way through my junior year of college.
You want to come over after school? We can watch MTV.
The hours I spend holding hands with girls is equaled only by the hours I spend in my bedroom making my superhero action figures go at it.
Batman, you love me.
I do, Green Lantern.
Green Lantern, you said you loved me.
Aquaman, I did not see you standing there. Have you been working out?
I am so good at dazzle camouflage. I'm like a one-man Ed Sullivan show.
Do Kermit the Frog.
Hi-ho, it's the Muppet Show with our very special guest, Miss Joan Van Ark.
Yay! Do Homer Simpson.
Marge ate all of Lisa's lunchbox.
Pee Wee Herman.
Sherry's not feeling so good today.
Madeline Kahn.
Darling, I would not normally ask this, but while you're down there, would you mind terribly tying my shoe?
Well, dude, are you being a girl?
What about Ed Grimley?
Yeah, Ed Grimley.
I must say. Like, today should be about Pat Sajak. No way.
But then again.
Maybe it should. It's difficult to say. No, today is about the Suncoast Middle School annual PTA Pancake Supper.
After the pancake supper, I'm riding home in the car with my parents. They're so proud and happy. We get home, I peel off my sweaty makeshift costume, take a shower, go into my room and lock the door. I'm so tired. Tired from constantly scanning to see if anyone will ever be able to put together the truth that Shane Fessler is right. Keeping a secret is a full-time job and I am exhausted. I pull out my tattered Speedo catalog from in between my mattress and box spring. One day, I will be in the arms of a real Speedo man. I close my eyes. I am so tired.
And that's going to be it for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. If you can stand more abuse, tune back in on Sunday when Robert will attempt to re-enter the studio and produce music or whatever he does. I don't know, talk to you about homeless people. What is it you do, Robert?
It is a mystery.
Tis a mystery, yes.
It is really a mystery.
Tis a mystery we've allowed you to do this for so long.
It is really a mystery.
Robert's been doing this for many, many years.
Many years.
Yes, this is, what, the end of our 17th year?
It was in 1954.
Or 18th year.
1954, no, 1994, 1995, yes.
Yes, our 18th year.
Yes.
And Robert's been here for the whole damn thing.
He seems
to be slipping a little bit, though. He's slipping into an Indian accent. Anyway, he's slipping out the door. And we will miss him. Yes, we will. I hope he stays away. I'm Uncle Dennis. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're tuned to the From the Cream to the Dregs here on Freak Radio. So stay tuned for music of the 60s, 70s, and beyond. Here's some Stevie Ray Vaughan.
Give me back that way.